Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and as always, I'm joined by my excellent panel from Youngstown, Ohio, the infamous author, activist, and teacher, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Pleasure to be here again, Simon. The sun is shining after a 3-inch snowstorm last night. We think March finally went out like a lion, and hopefully April's coming in like a lamb, and spring will sprung in the neck of the woods. And no earthquakes to report today from this area.
And from the City of Angels, ace lawyer and firebrand, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. From the City of Angels, where there are no angels. Happy Sunday to everyone. It's good to be back.
Right. And also from the same area, psychologist Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, welcome.
Hello, men. Nice to talk to you all. Happy Sunday.
Right. I've been wanting to do this for weeks, but I just can't quite bring myself to do it. I whenever I introduce you, I want to say, you know, psychologist Dr. Gary Penn from the land of fruits and nuts. Would you be offended by that? I think I did offend him. I think he just dropped off the line.
Yeah, really. I think he just he didn't say F you. He just left.
Well, you got your answer, Simon. You got your answer.
Okay. I'm sure he'll be back.
Just remember, fruit and nuts are very healthy for you.
Bad cell area. What happened to him before, I think?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a psychologist. Yeah, what can you say?
Yeah. And if he can't get over it, he knows where he can go for a therapist, you know? It's okay. It's probably in his plan.
And from the Garden State, New Jersey, or we should just call it Gate State, my good friend and king of pneumatics, Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. It's going to be an exciting day. I'm glad that we're not going after the hard topics, so that whatever we say, I'm sure we'll able to change the world when we're dealing with easy topics. So let's do it.
Okay. We have lots to talk about this week, and I just know that everyone at the in the panel is chomping at the bit. So let's get started. I think I'm going to pick on Sam first. Just because
That's only because Gary dropped off the face of the earth.
Up until February, he was a part owner of a bar and restaurant. For months, I had heard him gripe about the industry. His major worry was actually multifaceted. Yeah, that there was rumors that that the state was going to lower the legal drunk driving, blood alcohol percentage. That was just one. Increased competition was another big issue. I mean, the more bars you have on a single street, yeah, the fewer customers you're going to get. Sam, put your barkeep hat on. I will merely make comments, and I'll just let you rant. I'd like a latte grande and two Budweisers.
Who's breathing heavily into my phone?
It isn't Bill this time.
Who's doing what?
Peter, are you walking on the beach of Santa Monica as you talk to us?
No, I'm not. I'm comfortably situated in L.A. Is this a bad connection?
I feel like Jack right now. I got Chester the Molester on the other line and breathing heavily into the phone. Does anybody else hear that?
Let me turn off the porno channel that I have open.
Either that or Gary is just, something happened to him and he's breathing really heavy and he's trying to say something.
I think it's just wind.
You mean you're sitting outside?
I'm not.
Oh.
I'm not. It does sound like wind. I don't mean to interrupt Simon's momentum question about serving cafe latte and Budweiser.
I momentarily muted my mic and it was still coming through, so it wasn't me.
Well, it's coming. It's better now. It was blocking out every third word you were saying, Simon.
Oh, okay. I'll hit you again.
Better now, by the way.
I'd like a latte grande and two Budweisers.
Great, and you forgot to ask, and six garlic chicken wings to go.
All right.
You are referring to the infamous story I sent you that happened about two, 3 weeks ago about the wonderful big conglomerate Starbucks, unbeknownst to me and many others, has been doing an experiment, a marketing experiment around the world at certain of the locations where they receive temporary alcohol permits, and it went over real well in these targeted areas. And so now they're going to go worldwide. They're going to start more in the United States, where they're going to target certain coffee spots in certain cities that are going to expand from where they are now, and they're going to get liquor and wine licenses. And because the experiments, whatever cities they were in, they didn't tell what cities they were in, but now they're going to try and get liquor licenses to all as many of their locations as they can, and just engulf and devour. And I don't think many bistros next door to a thriving Starbucks could, or a bar, or a neighbor tavern, or anything, even an Applebee's or what have you, is going to have much luck if a yuppie couple or somebody's one's in the mood for coffee. The other one can go in there and get wine, and they're going to change their menus around. And it's going to be a real boom for Starbucks and a bust for a lot of some bars that will lose a lot of business. And so is the way of corporate America.
Wow.
This sounds a lot like, Walmart versus the local hardware store.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's when, I'm all for competition. We don't have that anymore. And the minute these communities allow these big, huge loads and all these, here in my community of Youngstown, we had a great company, hardware company, been around for almost 200 years. It was called Stanbaugh Thompson. I mean, you went there, and the people knew you by name, not that I'm this great fix-it guy. As a matter of fact, I needed a Stanbaugh Thompson because I can't screw a light bulb in, all right? And I would be able to go there and need a widget, a washer, or a tool, and someone would run right up to you and would wait on you hand and foot. The prices were great. The service was outstanding. The people were well paid. They all received benefits. You knew who they were. The family owners were and their children and their grandchildren were very benevolent, giving a lot of money back to the community. And the minute they never had tax abatement. They never had any of those other wonderful thing that would be giant corporations get. And the minute the politicians allowed them to happen, well, yeah, Lowe's came in, and what's the other one? Handyman, or what's it called? Handy? I can't remember the name of it. What's the other one? Lowe's, or what's the other one called?
Home Despot.
Home Depot. Those two came in, knocked out Stanbaugh Thompson. They went out of business. Bankruptcy, the whole nine yards, all those people who were making decent, wonderful wages. I went to school with a couple of the guys who were managers at the store. They're making good money, good benefits and all that. They found themselves working part-time at Home Depot or Lowe's, both of these guys, you know, selling paint and whatnot at a fraction of what they were making. And I know that story, it happened all around America and continues to happen all around the world, if not. And that's what Starbucks is doing. And a little, and we all seen it. You know, we've all seen mom and pop stores that we all say are the backbone of this country, and small businesses just bulldozed over by the giant corporations and the politicians throwing rose petals in front of them as they come in. And it's too bad.
Gary, you live in a large metropolitan area. Do you miss the mom and pop shops? You know, or do you think that, you know, the Walmarts and home despots of the world is the way to go?
Well, it's, I think business is basic Darwinism. You know, it's interesting. If you look at the Fortune 500 companies, every year, 200 of them are out of the Fortune 500. So every year of the Fortune 500 companies, there's 200 new ones, and 200 other ones just go by the wayside. So there's a part of this that I think it's just basic Darwin. It's Darwinism, and you have to really figure out. Walmart is big. Starbucks is big. All these companies are big, but it really forces all the entrepreneurs to be really smart and to give the customer something, whether it's an incredible experience of service. If Walmart can undersell everybody, then if I'm down the street, I have to give you something that is so value added that you're going to decide to come to my store. And in some ways, you know, it will force us. You know, Americans have become very fat in a lot of different ways. And we've become very comfortable. And so we have to be very sharp to stay competitive. So it's a loss in one way. In another way, it's kind of a good thing.
So, okay. Peter, I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to slant the question slightly, because I can. Would you prefer to buy from, a local grocer, where you know that the produce is sourced locally, or would you prefer to go to Walmart?
Well, it's very interesting. I basically echo and agree with the comments everybody else has said. The answer to your question is, when it comes to something like produce, I personally don't care where it's grown. I suppose I have a preference for wanting to buy locally. But for me, the most important thing is how healthy is it? If there's some local place that's providing, organic produce or something that's free from pesticides and all kinds of other additives or artificial influences, I would prefer to buy that. And I would be willing to pay a little bit more for it because I'm particularly concerned about the degree to which our food supply is contaminated by all kinds of things that big corporations and big corporate farms and big corporate food manufacturers put into things like produce and food. So that would be more appealing to me. But that's just – saying that is just another version of saying exactly what Gary said, which is that, you know, this is the smaller places are going to have to – there's still, I suppose, a niche for them in the overall framework of American capitalism, the marketplace, but they're going to have to be good at what they do. They're going to have to provide something that the market really wants, because if they're just going to go head to head with Walmart or something like that, and if they're going to offer the same exact products and services, and Walmart's going to provide them at a significantly lower price, or in an environment that just makes more people want to go there, then they're not going to survive. They're going to fail. So it's going to come down to providing something that these little individual mom and pop places provide in and above just bare price for a commodity. They're going to have to provide something extra that people really want.
Okay. We drifted off the subject. I'm really good at that. But Peter, what is your thoughts, or what are your thoughts about Starbucks serving Budweiser's?
This is the first I've heard of it, and it just seems kind of fascinating to me. It's not. Starbucks is not a, I perceive it to be a daytime place. I know they operate at night, but I perceive it to be a daytime place. That's where you go to, have a cup of coffee in the morning or have a cup of coffee in the afternoon or midday, that kind of thing. So I'm actually surprised that they're doing this. And it doesn't seem, for me personally, I don't like the move. I don't like Starbucks offering alcoholic beverages, because for me, Starbucks was a place where you got tea and coffee and beverages that keep you awake and alert, not the opposite. And the other thing that strikes me as odd about it is that Starbucks are almost always located in places where you could otherwise buy beer or wine. There's almost always another place near a Starbucks, at least from my personal experience, where you could buy the exact same thing. But they're becoming a kind of convenience store. You know, now when you go to Starbucks, they have all these convenience purchases that you can make. You could buy little things of food, little trays, little samplers, blah, blah, blah. And I suppose they're just trying to cater to that convenience mentality. And I suppose they have people who have done market studies on it, and they think they can, sell to it. I personally don't like it. And I also think it may be another example of what happens with products or services in the world. You know, sometimes somebody comes up with a really good product or service, and it's very good and it sells really well. And then somewhere along the way, they either get bought out or their corporate management structure changes, or they have new officers or directors, and somebody starts thinking, well, we can make this better by adding this or adding that or doing this or doing that or making this change or making that change. And oftentimes they make the overall product that was their mainstay, they make it worse, in my opinion. They destroy their brand and they destroy their value. I don't know if that's what's happening here. Probably not, but I see that an awful lot. I see people who have good products and services, and then they get successful, and then something happens, and it changes the overall value of the product and service, and then I think they become less valuable. But that may just be me.
And Bill, I'd love to get your comments. I know that your wife runs a small business. And you work for a small company. Do you think that Starbucks should be slinging beer?
No, I pretty much agree with Peter. I do understand that Starbucks is not going to sell alcohol until after 4 p.m. in the afternoons. my concern is, if they were going to just do something that kind of expanded their business, you'd think that they'd want to have Drambuie or Tea Maria or Anisette, something to add to the coffee. That's where I would have thought that they would have go. But to just come on and take on all the bars and everything, that's just it just doesn't seem right. You know, it's I'm not going to go to a Starbucks for a beer. That's just crazy. Again, if it was just alcohol added to a coffee and that remained their prize product, yeah, you know, maybe I would like to go in there and, you know, have a Jamaican coffee or something once in a while, but probably not. It's just wrong.
You know, I view it as overkill. I live in a small town. I think the population is about 20,000. I mean, no one with an ounce of sense would live here. Our problem is not bars. Churches outnumber bars by an order of magnitude. But yeah, I started to look at this through a different set of eyeballs, if you will. Yeah, forget about booze. Just consider competition and fast food restaurants. I haven't been to any of these or all of these, but you know, we have at least two McDonald's. I believe we have two Taco Bells, a KFC, Sonic, Burger King, Pizza Hut, Popeye's Chicken, Subway, etc., etc. I find it basically amazing that any of them stay in business. I mean, you know,
because Kentucky Fried Chicken owns Taco Bell. They all own each other. There's cross-pollination there. That's
right.
What it's all about. It's like Red Lobster, Death Lobster, and wherever you see a Death Lobster, you'll see a Olive Garden owned by the same company. They just want to cross the street from each other. The geniuses are doing all this stuff. They pay people far smarter than me with far better degrees from Ivy League schools and all that stuff to come up with all these ideas. And they're 1, 2, 3 years ahead of us, and that's why we see that. We always thought, and I agree with you, Simon. Where I live, there is two Taco Bells, five Mexican restaurants, and peel off the layers of who owns it, it's the same owners. And the funny thing is, what Peter, you were talking about, local ownership. You know, you would buy, you don't care where the food came from, but if you could, you would buy locally. That's my wife and I try to do that wherever we can. Problem is, there's not that much local. And
yeah.
Jerry, what you were saying is, hey, you know, you're right. In the big metropolitan area, L.A., San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Boston, blah, 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 those individual people, those good entrepreneurs, they're going to be able to offer that special niche just because of the size of the population they're serving. But for the rest of America, Walmart, Sam's Club, Home Depot, Lowe's, they have guns to our heads, and that's just the way it is. That's where you're going to have to go. And by the way, if you really take the time out to shop, and it's a small, when I owned the bars, I did have to try and find small, who's the best price. And you had to run, when your supplier wasn't around, and you had to run out and get that 5-gallon bucket of whatever, okay? You'd be surprised. The Walmarts, they're not that, and the Sam's Club, they're not that cheap. You know, you can go buy, if you drove around other places, you could actually find a lot cheaper. But that's the effort. And as you said, Gary, we're so fat, we're so conditioned, spoiled, whatever you want to say, we go right to the mall where the seven things are. So I never have to leave that little area. I bet to the people where I live, they've never been to places anywhere other than where the mall and the little eight little stores are that they have to go to. Sad but true.
Okay. Unless anyone has anything profound, let's move on. I want to talk about Obamacare. It's been trashed eight ways to Sunday on this program, and just about every news outlet in the U.S. Recent numbers released show that so far 6 million out of the goal of 7 million have signed up, but we still have a day to go. Now, the big unknown number is how many people have actually paid. I have yet to meet a happy person. You know, the TV showed or has shown numerous people really, really ticked off. You know, that they weren't getting what they thought they were going to get. Now, we might just have the very first happy Obamacare user. I'll let Bill tell the story.
Thank you, Simon. I'm in the process of changing jobs. I'm going from a warehouse job over to a manufacturer of pneumatic products. This little company that I'll be working for, we've done things like put resuscitators on the space shuttles, and there's actually on the space station, it's up there as well. We do things for manufacturing, and any place that you don't want to have a spark from an electrical circuit, you can use air pressure to run valves and circuits. So they came and they hired me. So a week from Monday, I will be starting full-time with them. Since Hurricane Sandy, I've been working part-time there, only X amount of hours per week. So enough being said, I went from my current employer to the new one, and I found out that they paid, that they were required to pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $23,000 a year for my health insurance policy from the company. So through a connection of one of the financial persons, his wife turns out to be a advocate for senior citizens and some social services. She came in and worked with me, and I was able to reduce my healthcare costs by 50% from what I'm paying now to get a better plan, to get, it's kind of based on predictability on how many times you go to the doctor. So I'll be taking home an extra $6,000, an extra $4,000 per year because I don't have to pay for healthcare. With them, I would be paying about another $7,500 to go to this new company in order to fall into their plan. So I'm very, very happy with this, and she's even helping me work on a dental program that is very reasonable. When I went out to Obamacare originally, the predictions of what you might pay for healthcare was hard to understand. It kept showing you 35, 40 plans, and you're supposed to figure out what's best for you. With this advocate that I've been working with, she has helped ask the right questions, and once we went in to apply for the actual insurance, I found it very reasonable. It was easy to maneuver through, and I haven't used it, but my costs are significantly less. I'm looking forward to it beginning as of May 1st, and I'll give you an update of how it all turns out. But this person gets it, shows it, The problem is when you're doing the estimate is so unclear. But when you're actually purchasing the insurance, I found it very clear and understanding as far as what you need to do. So I'm very satisfied as far as the dollar figure. Let's see how the plan works out. And it's with it turns out the plan I chose is with AmeriHealth, which is a national coverage, and people generally don't have issues with the AmeriHealth group of people. So that's my story.
Right. So let me just ask a question. The problem wasn't in the result. It was in the attempt to get to the result. It wasn't until you'd committed that you actually got the number. Am I getting that right?
That is correct. As well as this person who's been helping probably literally probably over 1,000 people get good health insurance, whether they're retired, whether it was senior, whether it was social services, whatever. She has worked as a volunteer advocate, so she gets where the plans are based on your predicted salary and predicted amount of times you go to the doctor. She can like narrow it down from this big range that doesn't make any sense to say, you know what, this is where we want to focus on. And she got me there. But how many people are there in the United States that are going to help guide you to do the right decision? My guess is that there's probably only a handful of them in the United States that get it. It shouldn't be this tough.
Right. Gary, I'd love to get your thoughts on what Bill just said.
Well, I'll just give you my ideas on Obamacare. I don't know if I want to speak to what exactly Bill said, but look, I used to trust that big corporations, PacifiCare, United Healthcare, Blue Cross, would all do the right thing. I used to believe that Merrill Lynch and Bear Stearns would do the right thing, but I don't believe that anymore. And I think Obamacare, we don't know. We're just starting out. Let's wait till 2020 to see what happens here. What's been going on with healthcare has been so horrible. If your wife has asthma, if someone has a heart condition, they could drop you in a minute. And if you look at it, you know, there was an article in the New York Times when they were talking about a knee replacement and a hip replacement. And in the U.S., it costs like anything between $35,000 and $130,000 for a knee replacement or a hip replacement. And the actual device that they put in your knee or they put in your hip costs $335. And the hospitals were charging $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for that little device. If you go to Europe and you get a knee replacement, it's about $7,000 to $13,000. So when Obamacare is having trouble, what you have to do is you have to say to yourself, compared to what? Compared to calling a call center to try to get Blue Cross to give you a procedure, and they're profit-oriented. They don't want to give you the procedure. And the doctors is motivated to give you all these tests and all these results and all these tests because they'll get more money that way, so they're very much profit-oriented. So, you know, in the last year, our health costs have gone up 1%. 1% since Obamacare came online. Before that, it was averaging 7%. And our results as a nation, as a global nation, have just been awful. We're 37th on results. And we pay more than anyone else by far. So certainly there's a lot of trouble. Certainly. It's a huge program, and there's been a lot of mistakes. But it doesn't mean that you trash it just because it's had problems from the beginning. And again, you just have to compare to what's been out there. And I don't know if any of you have been thrilled with insurance, the way the insurance companies, they've really taken advantage of a lot of people that if somehow, for some reason, Simon, you got some condition, they could drop you in a minute. And then what do you do? Right. And if Bill changes jobs, what do you do? He's out of insurance. So that what happens then is that Bill can't be mobile on his career. He can't go from one job to the other because he's going to say to himself, I've got to stay in my job. Let's say I have a pre-existing condition. I can't change jobs. And it's just awful for everybody.
Oh, can I
just interject one thing about Obamacare?
Sure.
One of the things that it promises, the promise is, you can't have your insurance drop because you came in through this program because you have a pre-existing condition, and two, you cannot be denied insurance because you have a pre-existing condition. And those are two of the things that were really good about Obamacare. Everything else is a little bit convoluted as far as trying to figure out what to do, but I cannot be denied insurance, period.
And that's not a small thing at all. That's a huge thing for a great number of people. And by the way, we have universal health care. Right now, we have universal health care. If you go to an emergency room, they're going to charge you so much more for anything else, you cannot be denied. And how many people are in bankruptcy now? How many families are in bankruptcy because they don't have health insurance? Well, what it really is doing is everyone could pontificate that, yes, I have a cell phone, but I don't have insurance. I have cable, but I don't have insurance. I understand that, and there's a case to be made for that. But at the same time, we're still paying for this in a huge way, and taxpayers are paying. Because when you go to an emergency room and you get a procedure, the taxpayers are still paying.
Correct. Peter, you and I have discussed Obamacare a number of times. I'm curious to find out your thoughts on Bill's story.
Well, I'm happy for Bill, and I think that, and I congratulate him, but I think that that's the way this process is going to work. This national legislation was an attempt to do something for the first time on a comprehensive basis that, quite frankly, I think should have been done decades ago. And there are going to be some glitches. There's going to be some problems. There's going to be some bumps in the road. And like anything that's introduced for the first time, it initially appears, in my opinion, like it's going to be more expensive. But I think as it becomes more ingrained into the way that everybody approaches life, like what Gary was saying was right. Well, yeah, I have to have cable, but I don't have to have insurance. Yeah, I have to have a cell phone or a BlackBerry or an iPhone, but I don't have to have insurance. That people are going to readjust the way they look at basic expenditures. And in the long run, I believe that implementing this type of system is going to save us far more than it's going to cost us. And whatever difficulties there are on the front end, I think they're minor. I think they're going to be minor when we look at the overall effect of the legislation on everybody's lives. And, you know, Gary made a good point about emergency room care. It's true that they have to treat you in emergency rooms, and it's true that when people end up there, eventually, if they don't have insurance, the taxpayers end up paying for it anyway. But there's also another massive cost for health care, and that falls into what I would describe as the category of long-term ailments and conditions. You know, if you suffer some sort of if you get some sort of cancer that requires long-term treatment, that can be tremendously expensive. If you have some sort of kidney problem or a diabetic condition or some other sort of pervasive internal problem, that can cost, you know, just an untold amount of money to treat over a long, long, long time, years. And many of these conditions that are causing people to have fundamental breakdowns in their health and well-being are brought on because of what we were talking about earlier, big corporations, in my opinion, putting stuff in the environment in one form or another that basically cause these systemic breakdowns in human health and functioning at various stages in life, and so I think it's I just think that this type of an attempt at a national health insurance system, it absolutely needed to be done. And in the long run, I think it's going to prove less expensive than people are feared, have concerns that it would. And in the long run, I think we're going to look back on this and say, you know, why didn't we do it sooner? And it's not that big a deal. You have to have health insurance. Everybody needs to have health insurance, period.
And Sam, I seem to recall a program a couple of months ago. We dragged your wife on
my wife.
The line.
She was wonderful.
First of all, I want to say mazel tov to Bill. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Always good to hear when someone who I know is doing well and something good's happened to you, and I hope good fortune continues to shine on you.
Thank you.
When our first initial foray into Obamacare, my wife and I, it was a horrible mess. Peter and Simon can attest when you talk to her. Our original premium was going to skyrocket. We were the opposite of Bill. We were the epitome of what everybody was hearing about. But due to my wife's hard work and diligent shopping, and with the help of Anthem and the agent she dealt with, we ended up being okay. So Obamacare originally was a sticker shock to us, but then we ended up being all right through a lot of my wife working the system and this and that. We didn't get better. We got a little bit worse, but we didn't get better. We definitely didn't get better, and our prices didn't go down, but they didn't skyrocket like they originally thought they were going to. My concern is, I can just do two things, is, and I agree with you, I think we should have universal health care. Peter, you're right, it should have been done years ago. And I hope that this the next group crop of people who come in 2014 and 2016 will make it better, because it is the law of the land. The Supreme Court ruled that it was. Let's make it better. Let's stop trying to put blockades in front of it and do all these crazy things that some on the far right are doing and some who don't like it and whatnot. But I don't understand what 30 to 40 million people uninsured, like 6 to 7 million is considered a... The people are going orgasmic over it. I mean, if we have 40 million people insured, shouldn't we be shooting for 40 million? That's not one thing. And my youngest son, who, by the way, is out there, Peter, covering opening day for Sports Illustrated, and he was the reason why you had an earthquake, because he showed up in New York, and, of course, that's what happens when mafias go certain places. Earthquakes follow. But, he's covering, I'm passing for him, he's covering opening day for the Padres, Angels, and Dodgers. Pretty good.
So he's the one who's bringing the earthquakes to town.
Yeah, he's having a good time than I've never done.
Just so you know, everybody, that was a doozy we had here the other day. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, he's been out there doing that. But I'm going to use him as an example as one of the young kids who they're really worried about. And he went through the whole system, clicking on, clicking off, find a way, get on. And he finally got on to it, and he found out, hey, at 24, this thing's going to be outrageously expensive for me living in Manhattan. I can't afford to pay for health care and all the other stuff I have to pay for in Manhattan. So he's paying the fine because it's based upon his a percentage of his salary from last year, which was next to nothing because he was a graduate student. So he's taking the dive on that, and then he's going to hope to find something in the future. And I think he, and talking to him and his friends and people his age, that's a big problem. We all know that. When I was in my 20s, I thought I'd never get sick. I think everybody in the panel would say the same thing. And we've got to get those young kids to realize, no, you got to get into this. You got to realize your health, preventive medicine, et cetera, because you got to stop living in the society that tells everybody it's never going to happen to you. Because, Peter, what you just said is correct. Long-term illnesses can just wipe out everybody. And that's such a domino effect on a family and friends and a business. Gary, what you said is correct. Things are bankrupt. I've met so many nice, wonderful people in my life bankrupt because of a health care cost. Not because of anything else, but because of the health care. And it's just absolutely mind-boggling, and it's society of ours with so much money, so much technology and whatnot, we can't get this damn thing straight. And I do hope, like you guys have said, this is a right step in the direction, and we build on it and not tear it down.
Well, you know, I'll back Sam up on this one. My stepson is 23 years old, and you know he works part time. He works hard. He'd love to have a full time job, but there aren't any. I mean, you know, other than fast food places, there really aren't any employment opportunities in this sleepy town. And you know, he went on to the Obamacare.com website, fooled around, and figured out that, you know, even though he's a, you know, young invincible, it was going to cost him a quarter of his income. And he just frankly can't afford it.
No.
Taking the $95 hit is far cheaper. And it shouldn't be that way.
It's horrible. It's horrible. It should not be that way at all. It's it's because they haven't. It's because we haven't figured out, or we choose not to help do the steps to correct our economy, and that's the only reason. You know?
Well, it makes me wonder if the healthcare industry wasn't spending $500 million on lobbying the Congress. If they weren't doing that, we would not have Obamacare. We would have universal healthcare, like Peter said years ago. And so all these congressmen and all these people on the right are just, you know, what are they talking about? I mean, I just wonder, like, why is this the worst thing in the world? And I wonder if you look at all these people, how much they're getting paid by the health care, well, how much they're getting, how much money is coming to their campaigns, for what reason? And then everyone else listens to them like it's the worst thing in the world, but I'm wondering, why is it the worst thing in the world?
Yeah. Well, I also wonder if there are like actuaries, they figure out how long you're going to live, and they figure out the special slots that only a minimal amount of people fall into. And my wondering of when I looked at these plans, if maybe that I happen to be fortunate and fall into the right slot that's affordable for me, because I have a bunch of reasons why I fall into one of those slots. So my concern is like if we took somebody else that had a different income, a different family situation and other things, would it be so much more expensive like everyone is saying? Or is it just that I happen to be in the 10% of the people in America who, by picking the right plan that matches for me, it works out well for me because that's the way they structured their fee payment? I don't know. I'm just wondering if something like that is going on, and I just got lucky and stepped into it.
It's very possible, but you're talking over 300 million people. And,
yes.
And the thing is, what you have to do when you talk about Obamacare, you have to compare it to what's been already out there. And what's been already out there is things have been going up 7% on a national level.
Yes.
Every year. It's going up. It's far exceeding inflation. Every single year it's been going up 7%. So you're going to hear horror stories, but you can't sit there and make national policy based on, you know, Joe Schmo who lives in North Dakota. You just can't do that. And by the way, the last thing is, this is a conservative Republican idea. This idea is from the Heritage Foundation, and for some reason, the Republicans have gone batshit crazy over this. And I just don't understand why the Republicans hate a Republican idea.
That is a good one. Hey, let's move on. We have lots more to talk about. And Gary, this is one for you. The whole Flight 370 debacle. You know, there was huge excitement on at least CNN that a plastic bag had been found. I think there's way too much coverage. I don't know if you have ever had to deal with grief counseling, and you know, maybe this is outside of your expertise, but do you think that we're dealing with this in a real manner? What the hell are we doing? We as in the press.
Yeah, well, CNN has become news porn. That's all that they are. They're just news porn.
I love that term. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I just thought of it, and I think it's a good one. But that's really what they are. And again, it's all under the guise of, you know, CNN and all these big corporations. They try to brand themselves. And really it is. It's just to your basic, most fearful instincts. What are you most afraid of? And we want to watch, and there's a part of us, me included, that is secretly happy that it wasn't me. And then we could kind of like think about it, how horrible it is. And it's kind of like a proctologist view of world events. Let's just bend over and look at it in every way, shape, or form. I understand it's a news story, and it's fascinating. It's we want to know what happened. It's interesting. But, you know, the other thing about America is we have this incredible need to be safe. It's like we should all, like, be in an antibacterial bath every night, because no one wants to get sick. No one wants to get injured. And we want this, like, we just want to know so we could feel safe. And we live, like, kind of in this death paranoia. And so it's this kind of purient fear. It's all based on fear and anxiety. And this kind of, you know, Freud talked about Phantos. It was the death instinct. And we all have this need to kind of look into it and to face death. And in some ways, this is our way to face death and still go home and have a cheeseburger.
Is this an unnatural interest, or is this just, what we are?
It is a natural instinct, Simon. But like I said, like, sex is natural. But then when you watch porn and someone's, you know, having sex with a bear, it's abnormal. But we want to watch it. I mean, it's abnormal. But like, God, do I have to tune in to bear sex or horse sex or whatever it is? It's so fantastic that I feel disgusted, but I have to watch it.
All right. Now,
sorry about that, guys.
No apology necessary.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with a bit of bestiality on the radio. But, you know, the question becomes, are the news outlets satisfying the craving by, the wall-to-wall coverage? Or, are they creating the craving?
No, it's both, Simon. I mean, if you watch the local news, which I'm sure you do, it's, you know, there was a news story the other day in L.A., a massacre like in Downey, like some guy, four people got killed in this liquor store or something, and there's like 10 news crews there. Like I said, it's like, I don't need to know it, but then when I'm watching my show at 10 o'clock and the 15-second promo comes on, massacre in Downey, stay tuned for the news at 11. It's like, okay, does it feed some psychological desire of mine to watch this? Again, it's because it's not me. I'm safe and home in bed, you know, and I'm comfortable, and I'm about to go to sleep, and I have my life to live, and these four slobs got killed. And there's a part of me that feels good that it wasn't me. And there's a part of me that's sickeningly, like, you know, in the traffic and the freeway, when there's an accident, everyone slows down. And we just want to know what happened. So it's about 50-50. It's our darkness within us, as Vader would say, it's the dark side. And then they just take the dark side and they put it under a magnifying glass, and they get big ratings. So on the other part of it, from the corporation side, it's all about money.
Okay, Peter, I'm going to change the question, and you probably won't like the question. You know, we've seen satellite images. We have them from Australia, France, China, but nothing from the U.S. I thought that we could spot a pimple on a terrorist bum with our gear. I guess the NSA is too busy peeping in on Angela Merkel taking a shower to retarget a satellite. Are you surprised that the U.S. hasn't popped up any images?
Well, that's an interesting question. I actually never even thought about that. I always assumed that when we were getting these satellite images, mostly from countries within the region where the disaster seems to have occurred, that it was a function of the fact that those countries focus their satellites on that part of the world because that's their part of the world and they have an interest in monitoring it regularly, whereas, I'm not sure other nations north of the equator particularly scrutinize that sector of the planet. I don't know. And also, your question assumes that if the U.S. satellites had picked up anything, that they would have divulged it. And it's possible that U.S. satellites picked up something, but they didn't think it added anything to the current body of knowledge and for whatever reason didn't produce it. I don't know. Or that maybe it's been produced and people have it, but we don't know about it. I don't know. But it doesn't particularly surprise me. What surprises me more is, and this is a little bit unclear to me, I'm still not convinced that we know for certain what happened to this aircraft. I think the general impression is that these images showing massive amounts of debris or large amounts of debris seem to establish that the plane went down and it crashed in the ocean there. But it's not clear to me that's been established yet. And I'm just curious if everybody else feels the same way. Is everybody convinced that they know what happened to this thing, or is it still up in the air what happened to it?
That's a great question. And, from a logical standpoint, I have to assume that something happened. And the popular thought is it went into the ocean. The other notion is that it got derailed and is hiding somewhere, but, you know, hiding a plane that big, you know, with 229 people on board, it's kind of difficult, you know. So I doubt that. And Gary, you know, back to you for a moment. The press has been hammering, you know, this story, and yet, you know, that there is no proof. You know, how would you take on the project of explaining to the families that, look, awful though it is, you know, your loved ones have passed on?
Yeah, there's you know, in my business, I face death. I face people dying. I have a patient now who's very young. Her father died. And in my field, I tell my patients this sometimes. I say, you know, there's nothing in my black bag that can help you. The Buddha says that life is suffering. And I think that the lesson that we have to learn from pain and suffering, the existentialist says that the only way we learn how to live is really dependent upon how we face death. And what I tell my patients is that what we have to do is we have to live on, and we have to become spectacular, and we have to learn lessons of appreciating life, appreciating today, appreciating the sunrise and the sunset and the food we're eating and the person that our daughters and sons and the people we love with. But, you know, that's a long-term thing. In the moment, there's nothing to do except grieve. You just have to suffer. You have to grieve. You have to cry. There's really nothing you can do, Peter. I mean, Simon, it's so horrible. It's so incredibly horrible to think that someone's coming home to see you, or someone just left, and you'll never see them again. And it's like when my dog died a few years ago, I would come home, and I would expect to see my dog, and that made me sad. And I can't even think about what that would be like if it's someone that I loved and someone that was close to me. So all I can do is just, as a therapist, is just sit there and basically cry with them. Not literally cry with them, but just cry with them and try to give some kind of perspective. But sometimes life is just very, very hard.
And Sam, you've been quiet.
Been listening to everybody.
All right, but Sam, I'm going to go back to the basic question. You know, you and I have discussed the NSA numerous times. What do you make of the fact that no satellite images are coming from the U.S.?
Well, it's either something to hide, or they just don't know. And if there's something, and either way, they don't want the people to know that. That's all I can think about, because it makes no sense to me that they wouldn't want to solve this mystery and these, like, get, you know, the poor family, the relatives, the cost. I mean, as you pointed out in the email, Simon, the ongoing cost of this, is it a fishing expedition? I mean, I thought for sure when they showed those objects, they were off this plane. In other words, you know, ocean junk, ocean garbage. And if the cost to send all that out there, it's just got to be astronomically, who's paying for it, So that's one. Of course, the families. And then the question is, where is this plane? Did it just disintegrate? Is that possible? But where's the explanation? You know, I think we're all logical people. If there's a logical explanation, what the heck is that? And I think that's the thing that keeps goes up. The reason CNN is in bestiality mode, to follow something from Gary, is because there was no answer. So that's the drama. Where's the answer? And so the theories could just go out there, and it's not going to stop. The people have a lot logical explanation, and you know, I mean, I'm getting to the point. It's like, hey, you know, it is now starting to be like a scene right from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That's the only logical explanation. I don't want. Why aren't we sending our nuclear subs out? We have these incredible submarines that can go all over the place. You would think they'd be there with all their high technology and their sonar and their well-trained and educated crews and the ability that these submarines have to cover that very difficult area and probably do it better than a plane from 30,000 square feet up looking. But, and maybe I've watched too many movies.
No, I think you hit it right on the button. And... Bill, before we move on, do you have any thoughts on this subject?
Nothing too real, new that anyone else hasn't said, but it just dumbfounds me that there are in excess of 13,000 satellites orbiting Earth. 13,000 active satellites in Earth, and they couldn't find the track of one jet. And that's just, you know, that makes me think more toward conspiracy or something to hide, because I'm thinking a boatload of satellites had to be in that area. I mean, again, there must have been the pocket of being able to avoid them, but there's just something wrong with that many satellites up there.
Right, and Bill, you're breaking up really bad. I suspect you're using the wrong satellite. Okay. Let's move on to a completely different subject. Actually, I believe it was Sam that gave me this idea. And it goes like this. It's a question. Does Hollywood drive the product, or does the product drive Hollywood? More importantly,
I was talking about guys when I said that, just so you could specifically come down, is, I don't know, the film Noah opened up Friday, and it's been controversial for what it's about, and across the board controversy. And I started digging more and more into it, finding out why. But the other thing was also that the whole rush of biblical movies coming out that would make Cecil B. DeMille blush if he knew what was coming out. And who's doing it? And to beware of the propaganda behind these films that are coming out. With that, I give the floor back to Simon.
Okay. I'm long in the tooth. And I view Hollywood as... a concept, if you will, that runs in phases. Disaster movies, you know, kung fu movies, space movies, superhero movies, and right now, you know, we seem to be knee deep in Bible movies. Noah is just the latest. Gary, what's your view of Hollywood?
Well, it's interesting because about three quarters of my clientele are in the entertainment industry. I have probably about five or six writers. I have directors from wannabe directors to Oscar winners. I have comedians. It's interesting. The about 6 months ago, a movie came out called Sharknado. I don't know if any of you.
Yeah,
I watched it.
Yeah.
I think that's Academy Award-winning material.
Yeah, but the thing is, this particular studio, they have a plan, an operational plan, that they have any movie has to have an outrageous title. Snakes on a Plane was another of the movies.
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's with Samuel Jackson, and it has to cost $200,000 or less. And these movies make so much money. Now, the ones you're talking about as far as Noah, obviously in America or across the world where there's a big audience, they're going to come flock to see it. Although I hear that the evangelicals are angry at that. But then you have the Spider-Mans and you have those movies. They're really going to make $500 million, $1 billion. And you have that and then everything else. And everything else is the crapshoot. I have writers, every week I have 3 or 4 or 5 writers, and they're trying to sell stuff. And what they go through, you would be shocked how difficult it is and how hard it is and how close they come. It's really a very difficult process. There's a few, it's funny, when I talk to my actors, this is a little off subject, but when I talk to my actors, I tell them that if you have 100 actors, and if you're fortunate enough to get into SAG, eight of you will make $8,000 a year or more. Everyone else makes $8,000 a year or less. So it's a very torturous process. The last thing is there are so many bad movies made. I don't understand that, but it's an interesting process.
We're going to go out to the phone lines, which is always exciting. We have someone coming in from the 908 area code. Caller, what's your name and what's your question or comment for us? Okay. This one's going to get next.
I couldn't hear anything. Did I miss something?
Simon. Oh, dear.
It sounds like a Sharknado out there.
Yeah.
Someone's talking from a tornado.
I also think we're back to the crappy audio connection, but such is life. We're talking about Bible movies. And, this latest fad, is it a fad? I'll ask you, Peter.
Well, in my opinion, these movies all fall into the same basic theme. And there was one genre of this theme, Simon, that I thought you left out. And I always think it's fascinating because... don't forget about the zombie apocalypse. That's always a very popular theme. And, in the past 10 or so years, it seems to me that I have seen movies about the destruction of organized society and the rise of basically human life in a post-apocalyptic world for whatever reason. I've seen movies about asteroids threatening to destroy the planet and wipe out all of human life. I've seen countless movies or heard of countless movies involving one form or another of the zombie apocalypse. I see, you know, now there's this sort of biblical genre, and these are all basically, in my opinion, examples of, you know, for lack of a better description, God's wrath wiping out humanity. We've seen movies about aliens attacking and destroying the planet and leveling it to ruins. You know, all of these movies, in my opinion, are depictions of what seems to be an ongoing fascination with the notion of an apocalypse or Armageddon. And I don't think it's surprising that there are segments in our socio-political environment who believe that, you know, this type of upheaval is something that's coming, whether it be coming because God is going to exact justice for the wickedness that of human ways, or it's coming because people are dissatisfied with the notion that there is a federal government or a controlling government that they don't like. But however you point it, all I see over and over again are depictions of the world being turned upside down and then everyone being forced to survive on their own in this post-apocalyptic or whatever environment. And there are even shows on TV now called, you know, Doomsday Preppers. And there are many people in the world actively planning for what will happen, you know, when the world falls apart. And maybe this is just the most recent, you know, version of something that constantly goes on in humanity. I mean, maybe people digging bomb shelters back in the 50s and 60s was the exact same thing. But it just seems to me that there is an undercurrent of society that believes that for whatever reason, world order is going to be turned upside down and that there's going to be people surviving on their own, whether they be facing a zombie apocalypse or what have you. And, you know, that this section of humanity wants to build doomsday shelters. They want to stockpile food and water. They want to stockpile guns and arms. They don't trust the government. They don't trust organization or society. And they're basically preparing for some great upheaval, whatever that upheaval might be. So it doesn't surprise me at all that Hollywood would try to capitalize on this market sense by offering a biblical depiction of you know, the destruction or recreation, if you will, of the world. It does seem to me that there's an undercurrent of American culture out there that is preparing for this to happen. And to a certain extent, when you start preparing for it to happen, in my opinion, there's a certain aspect of you that actually wants it to happen, because, you know, what's the point of preparing if your preparations are going to be all for naught? I mean, there's a large segment of people out there, in my opinion, who want to say, "I told you so," and you know, it seems to me we're kind of growing in that direction, and I don't know to what extent the belief that something like this is going to happen increases the risk that it actually does. You know, if you read a book a few years ago called The Secret, you know, that would convince you that all the collective thought that's being devoted to these various catastrophes indicates that any day now we're going to be overrun by zombies, we're going to be invaded by space aliens, and then an asteroid is going to wipe us out. But in a very real sense, I think that when people start to plan for the failure of society, in a very real sense, the society becomes a little bit weakened because of it, because there's fragmentation. And I think it's still just a marginal chunk of humanity that believes this, but it is nevertheless influencing what I think the way a lot of people are behaving. And in particular, I think the stockpiling of arms is a very important part of that.
Could I say one thing to that is, you know, I don't think, and I've said this before, I don't think it's that minor. George W. Bush is an evangelical Christian. And the evangelicals believe that you have to have a unified Israel in order for Christ to come back. And when and I do think that for a lot of people in politics, that the teachings of the Bible, the literal teachings of the Bible, I'm not talking about people who are good Christians and have a sense of grace about them. I'm talking about the people who are evangelicals and zealots these people are, it actually affects government policy. And I think it's a larger group. I don't, people say a lot that it's, I really do agree with Peter, but the only part that I would disagree a little bit is I don't think it's a small number of people. I really think it's a very large swath of our culture and our need for arming and being the biggest, having the biggest gun on the block and being able to use that force to get where what we want and how we want it. And a lot of that is ruled by the literal interpretation of the Bible.
Well, Gary, let me just say, I actually I think I want to believe it's a small chunk of our culture, but I think I completely agree with you that I think that it's much bigger than that. I do, and I just don't like to think that way, but I'm concerned it's bigger than that, and I'm concerned that in a very real sense there is some great catastrophe brewing in the world, and I don't know what's going to precipitate it.
Well, yes, Peter, look at the Republican Party. Every Republican candidate, for example, has to go to Bob Jones University, every single one, and they have to give a speech, and they have to praise their fidelity to what Bob Jones stands for and what the university stands for. If you think about what percentage of Americans do not believe in evolution, I think it's in the 40s. If you want to talk about what percentage of Americans think that the Earth is 6,000 years old, it's remarkable. It isn't like 5 or 10%. You're talking about 40, 45, 50% of the people believe this. And in the Republican Party, it's like 70 or 80%. It's the Republican Party has become a theocratic party. And I'm sorry, they do other good things, they have other good ideas, but on a core level, it's become a theocratic party.
Right. And I think that if they do...
Wait a minute. I think, guys, then and I agree with you guys, there are always exceptions to the rule. But so are the Democrats in order to keep their belief in this. Some of them do the same sort of thing. Both parties, and all of us are guilty of it, have allowed God or the religious to accept. There is no separation between church and state anymore, and it's both political parties' fault. Republicans more, I agree with you, Gary. But they've but if you go back to what I've always said, go back to our original roots of the founders. There was a huge wall of separation of church and state, thick and tall and big, because of what they went through, what their family went through, what they could remember, what history had taught them at that point. We knocked that wall down years ago. I mean, just look at our money, right? What do we say on our money? In God we trust, okay? And so, I mean, it's been going on for years. We've allowed it. It's no surprise to me where we're at right now. But what Gary was just, you scare me about, is when you said the literal transition of the Bible, and I agree with you. But here's what I get really scared about, knowing what we've always talked about on this show. We all know the attention span of most Americans is 140 characters. That's why Twitter is so popular, that they will go to these movies, and I teach, and I know this stuff, guys. And then, you know, not for all of them, but for the average, they will go to see Noah, and they will think the bad guy actually was a stowaway. That's what I started this whole conversation with Simon about today. The bad guy in Noah is a stowaway in the ark. We all know in Genesis, which is a simple little story and a big story, so there's no stowaways on the ark, according to the Bible. But the literal artistic liberties that they can take scares me to the point that the sequel to Noah will be about the ark ramming the Titanic, causing the Titanic to sink.
Don't forget the aliens and the zombies.
But I agree with you, Peter. That, you know, look at the shows that are on reality TV shows, The Walking Dead. Everyone's in there. I mean, you're absolutely right, and we'd all be fooled not to think that our music, our video games, our technology, our television are all products of our time. That's why the Hayes people came in and when Hollywood was getting a little bit more, showing a lot of leg and a lot of breast, and a lot of the gangsters were popular, they put the Hayes Commission in to it, and they had the more, that's where the ratings game started. And you know, they started to stop all that stuff, and because they didn't want it to get out. Well, the genie got out of the bottle, and now we have what? Where your movies have become so wild and so this and that. And, but, like, the one thing, Gary, you talk about how expensive it is to make movies. Believe me, I know one of my books was optioned. I can't believe what it's gone through, and I haven't seen one penny yet. No, I doubt I ever will. But the interesting thing is what it takes to do all that. But there is Hollywood does tons of terrible movies, and the one great thing about Hollywood that we see is there's no monopoly. There are the blockbusters, there are the Spider-Man, but there are all these indie movies being made. It's one of the few places where there's a ton of movies being made all across the world that people want to go see movies can go see. And I like that. You know, it's up to our person to go, but, you know, I do agree with you, it's expensive. I do agree with you, Peter, that you put up some great points. People are waiting for that powder keg to happen. I hope it doesn't, you look at what today was a nice show. We didn't talk about all the bizarre, horrible things that are about to, you know, that are happening out there, and I liked it. And it was nice to focus on popular culture and listen to all your, everybody else's comments and ideas, and I thank you for that.
It's always fun to talk about zombies.
Right, yes it is. And on the subject of zombies, I do want to bring up a Ted Nugent story. Ted was supposed to be the headline act for a concert in Longview, Texas on July the 4th. They were going to pay him $32,000. However, Longview has changed their mind, and the city has paid him $16,000 and change, asking him not to attend. A great quote. I hear from reliable sources that the mayor is a racist and was offended that my band performs mostly African American influenced music. Okay, who wants to chime in?
Boy, I'm not even sure what to make of that.
That's like watching something drop in the middle of the room and nobody wants to claim they did it.
Listen, if you want to talk about, I still got to sit there and go after Sam. If you want to talk about crazies, there are crazy Democrats, but on most issues, the crazies and the most crazies are the Republicans. I don't know where you see a Democratic Ted Nugent. I just don't know where you're going to see a Democratic Ted Nugent. You're not going to see him anywhere.
I'm not going to go to top with you with entertainers. Entertainers, if you guys give Ted Nugent so much credit, it makes me vomit. He's an entertainer. He's a has-been rock star. Who cares what he thinks? He's not running for office. Same thing with what Sean Penn thinks about his politics. I don't care. Go act, Sean. Go write. Go make movies. Like, you know, the last movie you made that was great was the one about Into the Wild. Go make more movies, man. I don't want to hear what your political viewpoints are.
I'm not talking about Ted Nugent. I'm talking about the Republican Party. Name me one Democratic Ted Nugent and people who support people like that. The Democrats have plenty of problems, but the Republicans have lost their minds.
I don't give a shit about Ted Nugent. You guys do.
It's about the Republican Party.
You're playing a CNN game.
No, it isn't about Ted Nugent. It's about It's about the 100,000 people in the audience, the crazy Republicans, who want to go out and get an assault weapon, and they want to do these things because Ted
wait, you're all over the place here. We're talking about Ted Kennedy. Now you're attacking the Republican Party. I don't want to, you want me to go like, go get a list of Democrats who have put their foot in their mouths, who say stupid things, who people follow, entertainers.
Now, name me one Democratic person who has something Ted Nugent. The Democrats have Bono, and they have Bruce Springsteen.
I'll give you a
woman. The Democrats have Bono, and they have Bruce Springsteen. They don't have crazies like Ted Nugent. It's different. It's not the same.
Madonna. She had a big mouth. She said some stupid thing, but I don't hold that against her.
Okay,
she
but Madonna's like Ted Nugent. All right, but Madonna's like Ted Nugent. You're right.
Views? Yes, it is. You give credence to Ted Nugent. That's your problem. I don't. He's an entertainer. Take it like that. He needs to sell more records.
It's
I don't
not
know.
About Ted, it's not about Ted Nugent. It's about the 100,000 people in the audience.
All right. I can't. They all have bad audiences. Come on.
All right. No, they don't. It's different.
You bring up Ted Nugent, I don't. I think he's a fool, okay? I don't give him any credit. You're like CNN. When it comes to Ted Nugent, Gary, you're like CNN with the plane. You keep focusing on it because it's an accident. You know,
It's not about Ted Nugent. It's the 100,000
people who bought his song. How many people have Ted Nugent? If Ted Nugent started a revolution, how many people would follow him? Three?
Sam, that's a good question. Do you think Ted Nugent is more of a zombie or more of a zombie hunter? Which category would you put him into?
a zombie. I think he's the Walking Dead.
You think he's a zombie? That's interesting. I thought you would have put him as like one of the head zombie hunters. So in the great movie, is Nugent the leader of the zombies or is he the leader of the resistance force trying to kill the zombies? That's really what we're talking about here.
No, he's a Walking Dead. He's Dead Man Walking when it comes to his career.
He's the leader of the zombies. He's that guy, the crazy guy in front of the zombie pack who's got safety pins in his head.
The only reason he's entertaining is to sell more records, to sell more books. Royalties.
You ever see that movie Ghosts of Mars? That was a movie about zombies.
That was horrible.
No, not Val Kilmer. This one had Ice Cube in it and Natasha Hester, who, by the way, is a fantastic actress.
Natasha Hester.
I just said that. Was there an echo in here? Now, you remember the head of the zombies on Mars who did it? He was a crazy guy. That's Ted Nugent. He was the crazy man. They had to kill him if they had any hope of killing the zombies.
And how bad was the movie, Peter? How bad was the movie?
It had Natasha Henstridge in it. How bad could it be? It was awesome.
I'm going to interject here. You guys are having way too much fun. So, there's just one last subject I want to get some opinion on. We're going to talk about Tesla. Not Nikolai. I mean, he's one of my heroes. We're talking about the Elon Musk Tesla. And he's been feeling little love from the existing automotive world. Tesla does not want to sell its product through the traditional dealership system. It wants to sell direct to the consumer.
Good.
Yeah. But this is not sitting well with the big automakers and certainly not with the dealerships. Maybe I'm simplistic, but surely if I make a product, I don't care what it is, a widget, I should be able to sell it in whatever manner I want. eBay, Amazon, bricks and mortar stores that I own, or some sort of franchise system. Why can't Tesla sell their cars in, oh, let's say, Texas?
In my opinion, they can, but your question prompted me to ask another question, and I always forget this. What exactly is a widget?
A thingy.
Yeah. I think they should sell their cars any way they want. God bless them. They're sending terror shockwaves through the industry, and I think it's about time we got away from oil and we started all driving electric cars. That's my opinion.
Right. But from a legal perspective, you know, let's in Tesla and talk about Simon's chocolate bar. Yeah, I'm being told that if I want to sell my chocolate bar, I can't open up a shop that says Simon's Chocolate Bar. I would have to go through a third party. This doesn't make a lick of sense to me.
Well, it doesn't make sense if you're thinking, I mean, the only way it makes sense is if you're selling your chocolate bars in food chains like Ralph's or Bonds or Safeway or whatever. Then, you know, then you've got to deal with those retailers. But if you're going to sell directly, then personally, I don't see any problem with that unless there's some law in a particular state that would impede that, and I'm not convinced that law would survive the constitutional challenge. But I'm not aware of any prohibition on any kind of direct marketing in any way. But Texas, you know, Texas has its own way of doing things, so I don't know anything about Texas.
Right. Well, I just picked Texas out of
seems to me Texas would let anybody sell or do anything for any reason at all, and they don't care about anything other than promoting local businesses or all businesses.
I mean, now Gary, same question to you. I'm not even sure you've heard about this story.
No, I've heard about it, but it's kind of like what we started the podcast with the big Walmarts, and there's a small company that's trying to be an interloper. If you can do it better and you can do it differently, I mean, Tesla is the perfect example of a small company with a terrific idea that puts out a great product. They're doing something. They're going face to face with Walmart and trying to find their little niche. And let's see what happens and see where they are in 5 or 10 years, if they could be the next General Motors. Who knows? But as far as Texas goes, again, I'll just start ranting about Republicans again. I'm sorry. So you better shut me up.
Don't worry, Gary, because a younger rock star who's a liberal Democrat, you'll love this club, but he doesn't have much of a following, but he does name his kids stupidly. He once said Republicans don't care about black people, so that's okay to say things like that. And then, of course, your favorite, Rosie O'Donnell, one of her greatest quotes after 9/11. One of my favorite liberal Democrats, gives tons of money to all those Democrats, but has no following because she's worthless, once said, "Don't fear the terrorists. Their mothers and fathers, too." And that's why I don't take entertainers from each side seriously at all. So, with that, Simon, there's something about the audio. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
What did you say, Sam?
Bill, are you still with us?
I am back with you.
Can you
hear me?
Creating the audio havoc?
No, I muted my microphone while I'm listening.
Huh.
I don't know. It's been a bad one, to that. Gary's been good. Peter's been good. Bill's been great. Simon's been wonderful. I've been off my rocker because I can't stand Ted Nugent anyway. I can't stand him. I don't like him. I don't like his music. I don't like him and all that. And then I'm on a Ted Nugent tirade.
Sam, we just got to get you to come out of your shell and tell us what you really think. I'm worried about you keeping it all inside.
I want to talk about Noah. And you guys,
well, we'll talk about Noah next week. God bless him and his art. That's going
to
be awesome.
No, we're going to talk about. No, we have to talk about. And I want everyone to have an opening day thoughts. I'm so excited. Baseball.
Oh boy, here comes baseball.
Here comes baseball.
Okay, folks. I do need to close this up, but I'm going to go around the table and get everyone's parting thoughts. Gary, I'll start with you.
Simon, as usual, you are the best moderator. Very good, keeping me in check so I don't blow a gasket. Man, it was fun talking with you. Really enjoyed it, and I'll wait till next week to do it again.
Oh, you betcha. And Peter.
How do you say beware the apocalypse in Latin? I think I want to be able to cultivate that phrase because that's going to be my mantra. I want to say beware the apocalypse in Latin. Hope we avoid it for another week and see everybody next week.
Pluribus unum.
E pluribus unum, that's good.
Yeah, I did Latin for 5 years in school. I think Sam pretty much...
caveat apocalypto. Caveat apocalypto.
I will double check it. And Sam...
I want this to be known that I really have a hard time, but I know when I hang up, we all hang up, Gary's going to go get his air guitar out and play Cat Scratch Fever.
Man, Sam, you're just obsessed with Ted Nugent. It's unbelievable.
I didn't know this. I mean, obviously...
You're obviously a closet fan, Sam. You've been outed.
I'm going to be making a note of this, and when I want to rile Sam up, I'm just going to say Ted Nugent. And
I'm
going to
carve
him
Sam
rent.
Plus Ted
you know,
on a tree with a heart
tonight.
Around it.
For 24 hours, I'm going to hit that stupid song "Stranglehold" in my mind for you guys today. Thanks a lot.
Happy to help.
That you mentioned that. That was actually a song that a good friend of mine was going to use as the backdrop for a video. It's,
Peter would say, if you think about it, Stranglehold would be a good title song for a zombie movie. Background, wouldn't it?
I love it. Now we're back to zombies. I love it.
Right. And last but by no means least, Bill, do you have any parting thoughts for us?
I love today's discussion, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. I think I lost it during the fight over zombies, and I guess what it really comes down to is, do you want to know a zombie, and would you really put up with a zombie living next door to you? That's really the question.
Well, if it's Natasha Henstridge, I will.
I thought you liked Denise Richards more than her too.
Her too. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, the bigger question is, how do you feel about having a zombie as a president? Oh, maybe we already have one.
We already do.
But, 2016 is just around the corner.
Well, wasn't Abraham Lincoln a zombie killer?
Yeah, he was a vampire killer.
I thought he was a zombie killer.
Well, no, there's a subtle difference between vampires and zombies. I'm not sure, but, you know, technically.
I can see the headlines now. Yeah. Zombie beats Democrat.
You better watch out what you wish for.
Okay, gentlemen, it has been delightful. Let's
adios, everybody. Have a great Sunday.
Yep.
Emptor Apocalypto.
Next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.